Okay, there's a lot of people I'd like to thank for this project, the lab at University of Kentucky, Mike Sharkey, my advisor. His door's always open, great advisor. And particularly Barb Chernowski, who let me use a lot of her data for this project and helped me with the analyses and so forth. Ashley Dowling, University of Arkansas, also a great help. He was a postdoc in the lab, and so that was great. And a special notice to Adam Kessheimer and Dickie Yu. Dickie Yu's got a great database, makes it easy to work on preconids, and Adam's a fantastic lab tech. And of course, funding and family. I'm going to start today a little unconventionally and non-conventionally and work on and introduce microgastroidia. I'm not going to talk about the group that my project's on. I'll introduce this first. It'll make sense later. This is a giant radiation within preconids. There's 7 to 10 subfamilies, and they've been used in biocontrol. Many common species, well-known species. Cotesia is a great one. Everybody's seen this picture on the bottom right of a hornworm parasitized by Cotesia. There's Chelonides I'll be talking about later. They have a cool shield over the metasoma. It's just a big group with a lot of species. And they're commonly often cited as an ancient rapid radiation, things that diverge very, very quickly over a very, very short period of time. And there's supposed to be a citation down there. Anyway, this image is taken from Whitfield and Lockhart in 2007. Ancient rapid radiations are typically very difficult to resolve phylogenetically, especially with morphology. So people have turned to genes often in molecular work, and often they do 1, 2, 3 genes, something like that. But Murphy et al. Did 7 genes for this group, Microgastroidea, and this is a very, very big analysis with this group, with the hopes of resolving some of these really problematic flip-flopping taxa. But they kind of didn't. The subfamilies within Microgastroidea flip-flop depending on the analysis method. And so you sort of get, as a summation, you get sort of a polytomy for the microgastroid groups. But you do always find chelonines as sister to the rest of Microgastroidea, and ichneutines, this other group, sister to Microgastroidea itself. And it's the ichneutines that I'm going to be talking more about today. So in the way of an overview, it's a smaller group. There's about 10 genera, 88 species. They're cosmopolitan, found all over the place. But they have their highest diversity in the New World tropics. And they're endoparasitoids. They attack sawflies and leaf-mining Lepidoptera. And that's kind of unique because a lot of preconids, a lot of other Hymenoptera for that matter, don't really go after sawflies very often. So that's kind of neat. And so this is sort of what it looks like. This is a list of microgastroid subfamilies as well as a few others. And they all attack Lepidoptera, well, for the most part. And then ichneutinae, you have the 3 tribes, and I'll be talking about these a lot, so I'll just say the names so you familiarize yourself with them. Musbikianae, Proterpionae, and ichneutinae. Musbikianines, they attack Lepidoptera as well, leaf-binding leps. So that's the only group that does that. The other two attack these sawflies. And so that sort of makes this ichneutinae sort of an interesting family to work with, subfamily to work with. The Musbikianines, leaf-mining moth parasitoids, are very, very different from the other two groups. They look totally different, very different wing venation. As you can see on the bottom, it's very reduced. You never confuse these beasts. They're smaller. They're generally drabber colored. Doesn't make them less cool, but less colorful. That's a big proterpine, but you still see the dichotomy there. So with that introduction to ichneutines, I'll start with my objectives. I want to test the monophyly of ichneutinae itself and then its genera and tribes. To do this, I'll be analyzing 3 genes, not 7 like Murphy et al., but 3 genes, 28S, D1 through 5, 18S, and CAD. These were picked based on their previous use in phylogenetics for Hymenoptera. I'll be aligning 28S and 18S with secondary structures. It's a really cool way to analyze stuff, and I'll be analyzing the results with parsimony and Bayesian inference. And here's what I get. This is a Bayes tree that I've mapped parsimony bootstrap supports on. You have the posterior Bayesian posterior probabilities on the top and the bootstrap values on the bottom. 1 is big, the best you can get for Bayesian runs, and 100 is big, best you can get for bootstrap. So that's cool. What I get here is a paraphyletic grade of ichneutinae leading to the microgastroidea. So this is interesting. Not the first time, but the first time they've been broken up like this into 2 separate subfamilies. So they may be two separate subfamilies. For that reason, for the rest of my talk, I'm going to be talking about them as if they're two different subfamilies, proposing this new Proto-Rapini as a potential subfamily for Braconids. So just sort of to map out sort of the biology on this tree, you get a basal Lepidopteran group. They all attack Lepidoptera, and then the Musbeckianines that are in the Ignitina there that attack leaf-mining moths, sawflies, and then Lepidoptera again, but back in the Microgastroidea. So if I take this hypothesis that Ignitini is divided into two subfamilies and map it on the Murphy et al. Tree, you get this, and you can see a basal grade of egg larval peristoids, things that lay their eggs in the eggs of the host and develop and emerge as larvae, and then a monophyletic group of larval peristoids. So the other thing I want to do is look at generic relationships. And I use three genes, but I only have the parsimony data to show you today, and that's here. Red dots indicate bootstrap values of greater than 95 probability, or that's not probability, bootstrap values of greater than 95. And just to run through it, you see a monophyletic Microgastroidea and a monophyletic Proto-Rapini, same thing that you get in Bayes runs. And then below that, you have a grade of or a monophyletic group of Ignitini in a strict sense. Other cool things that you find here are that all the tribes are monophyletic. Ignitini is monophyletic, and Musbeckiani is monophyletic. And within Musbeckiani, you see these two big genera, Oligonurus and Paroligonurus, that are also come out monophyletic. This is the only tree I ever get with any of the runs, so I kind of believe it, even though there's very low supports for a lot of the nodes. These Oligonurus and Paroligonurus used to be a lot of different genera. I think there were like 15 or something like that. And Sharkey and Wharton in 94 sunk them into these two genera. So this is great. I support that resolve. One problematic taxon is Proto-Rops. This thing needs to be just worked up really, really well. There's a bucket of species that nobody's describing. They come out paraphyletic in this analysis. That could be because of taxon sampling. We need more taxon, more genes. It's just a problem taxon. So that's where I'd like to focus more work in the Proto-Rapines in the future. And so major conclusions. I've got Ignitini in a broad sense is paraphyletic, coming out with two different subfamilies, the Proto-Rapini and the Ignitini. And then the tribes within those groups are monophyletic, the Ignitini, Musbeckiani, Proto-Rapini. Oligonurus and Paroligonurus, just like the morphological revision in 94 suggests, they're monophyletic, and Proto-Rops is non-monophyletic. It's a problem taxon, needs a lot of work. Future directions, new taxa need to be described. Like I said, there's just buckets of species. There's three described species of Proto-Rops in the New World, and I've just noticed in the collection in the Sharkey Lab, maybe 11 or 12, something like that. So lots of new taxa need to be described. More genes for all groups. CO1's a gene that I'm sort of working on, but I don't have many taxa amplified for that. So what do you do? I want to combine all these results with morphology to see if there's an interesting story there. And then to me, most importantly, is this sort of philosophical question. You have a morphological phylogenetic hypothesis that supports one idea. And then you run a bunch of molecular work and you get a totally different hypothesis. What do you do? And I kind of flip-flop with the way I feel about it. I'm not proposing a new subfamily hardcore yet. I think there needs to be a lot more data, but I don't know. That's sort of an interesting question. And that's it. I'll take any questions.
We have time for several long questions.
Yes.
How much data have you got for the sawfly sort of relationships, and is there enough data to sort of track the transition into sawflies and what routes the sawflies have graduated on?
Yeah. So. I have an answer. Tell me if this doesn't answer your question. I hope it does. Within the sawfly peristoids, there's things that attack concealed. The most interesting relationship to me is things that attack concealed and exposed hosts. And so what I want to see is things that attack exposed hosts, and then things that attack concealed hosts, and then the Musbeckiani that attack leaf miners. That would be cool. I sort of map it on a tree and it doesn't really come out that way. But that could be because of a lot of things. The host records for this, rearing data for this group is very weak. There's very little biological knowledge known in this group, and I can't really do a lot of it. This is a master's project, so likely won't get any answers anytime soon. But I am going to reanalyze it again, because with this new phylogenetic hypothesis, it's sort of maybe shows that trend a little better. Barb. Yes, and things wobble depending on, so for example, I have a directine in there, and if I remove it, then everything, all the relationships leave. All the support for everything goes away. And then if I take all directines out, then it all comes back. So things flip-flop a little bit based on outgroups, and I'm playing more around with that. I kind of see the trend that I add either a lot more outgroups gives me a robust hypothesis, or a very, very few number of outgroups give me a robust hypothesis. But anything in between there seems to kind of mess things up. I don't know. Yes? Well, so the Whitfield Lab's done a bunch of that seven gene analysis. They've done, see if I can list them all, ACC, arginine kinase, wingless, and rhodopsin or something like that. I hope I'm saying those right. Anyway, those are probably the ones I'd be looking at. The reason that I'd be looking at those is, like I said, their previous use in phylogenetics. I'm sure you've used some of those even. So.
Thank you, Ray.
Yeah.